Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might know me as one of the co-authors to Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, or the upcoming Real Life Paleo books. But what you'll find out on this show is that I really like to talk about tangents and soapboxes, and definitely about lifting heavy things.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne of ThePaleoMom.com. I'm the author of two books, The Paleo Approach and the upcoming companion guide, The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm a huge nutrient density geek, and I just can't help talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up, and you get to listen to our gossip.
I don't think my accent's back yet.
No, darn.
I know.
I even gave you an extra day.
That's true, but I haven't actually done anything other than work on the book. So that isolates me from all of the accent around. Yeah, the only thing we did yesterday was go to a farmer's market to get some food. And then the people who were running the farmer's market were Americans, so it totally didn't help. That's it. That's all I've done.
Well, I am currently at home, and my child's playing right behind me. It's awesome. I'm sure that our listeners will appreciate the noise.
This is going to be... So, also, I am, bizarrely, because I'm in Pacific time, it's early afternoon. So not only am I still jet-lagged and exhausted from working on this whole book thing, and yes, everyone, it is not done, and yes, there is a story, but don't worry, the release date is going to be fine, and it's just that I am now not enjoying my vacation, and instead, I am working while jet-lagged with two jet-lagged children, but yeah, my kids are playing currently quietly in the other room, but I don't know how long that will last, so this could be interesting in terms of background noises, randomness, podcast.
Well, I appreciate everyone's patience with us this week. We did have a regularly scheduled podcast yesterday, but my family had an emergency. We had a death in the family, so I wasn't able to record at our usual time with the scheduled guest. So Sarah, very accommodatingly, despite her very busy schedule, is working with me during this alternative work schedule, and we're doing a daytime recording, and we're gonna actually have a topic for you, which is because Sarah and I both feel really badly that we've just done a bunch of check-in shows. We felt like we wanted to give you a topic that is both helpful and interesting and timely to what we've got going on right now. So We will have a show for you, and I apologize that it's pretty much my fault that there's background noise and stuff like that, but hopefully you can understand why we would need to make such accommodations. So, other than the elephants stomping above me and that sort of thing, I've had pretty busy, interesting week. We've started getting edits back from Real Life Paleo, so we had a few weeks off, but now we're back on the book. It's good. We need a mental break. And Matt and I took Friday as his Father's Day gift. I got him tickets to an amusement park, and so we spent all day Friday at an amusement park being shocked at how much media there was, like marketing. There were like 4-foot signs every 6 feet marketing Snickers bar and Magnum, Good Humor, Rita's Ice. Like it was like bad food, bad food, bad food, bad food, bad food.
You're supposed to go from junk food to junk food to junk food.
Right. And so you're walking from one ride to the next and you literally pass 15 signs. And I just couldn't imagine. I told Matt, I'm like, can you imagine if we brought the kids here? Because they would just literally, every time they saw a sign, say, I want that, I need that. And that's exactly why those signs are there. It just, it was really horrifying. The other two amusement parks that we've gone to before haven't been like that. We won't be going back. It was, at first it was like, ooh, I want that. And then I'd smack myself in the face and say no.
Do you want to share which amusement park you went to, or do you not want to like,
I don't know. I mean, if I'm bad talking them, probably not. If people follow me on, Instagram, they'll know, but, normally we go to Busch Gardens or King's Dominion, and we really, really like Busch Gardens, and King's Dominion's good. It's never bothered us. We just like Busch Gardens the best. It's kind of like Epcot in that there's like areas, there's like a Germany and an Italy and a whatever, and so it's nice to kind of walk through, and there's a little bit of history, and it's really beautifully landscaped, and they've got good food, actually. They're really gluten-free friendly, the way that Disney's supposedly gluten-free friendly. So, last year when we went to Busch Gardens, and it was like stark difference to go to the one that we went to this year. It's just the opposite. We got bunless burgers and I got really sick. I don't often get sick anymore because I've, done so much healing on my gut that, it was like a surefire sign for me that there was a serious contamination, bad food situation going on in the kitchen. And I told Matt, like, I can't eat at the park anymore because I got so sick. So fortunately, we had some paleo kits and U.S. Wellness Meats pork rinds in the car. So we just, like, walked to the car and got a snack at one point because I wasn't willing.
I have to tell you, if this is, like, totally not a funny story, and people are going to be like really bored listening to this, but I was flipping through Instagram and enjoying looking at all of your amusement park photos while eating U.S. Wellness Meats pork rinds. And then I saw the picture of you eating U.S. Wellness Meats pork rinds, and it's like, oh, we're pork rind sisters.
I think we've been pork rind sisters for a long time. But yes. So anyway, one of the things that Sarah and I thought that we might be able to do is talk a little bit about how to navigate just traveling and being out in general. Because, you know, even as a seasoned paleo person, I genuinely thought that I had done the safe thing food-wise. Yeah. And still, you know, it was a problem for me. And I you know, just sometimes that happens, and you know, you eat soup and healing foods the next day. We've got podcasts on what to eat to recover when you've been exposed. So certainly check that podcast out after this one if that's something that you're interested in, because I certainly employed some of those techniques afterwards. But Sarah, with you traveling and with kind of my experience being out and about, and also having recently traveled across the country to San Francisco myself and that sort of thing, we thought we could give some people advice on how to successfully as you can travel without, you know, getting exposed or sick. And that's not to say that if you want to eat whatever it is while you're out, by all means, we're not telling you not to, but certainly for most of us, we try to at least moderate to things that won't make you sick. So,
right. Yeah, this is, I mean, I always think of this as, you know, part of traveling is knowing where your own boundaries are. So for us, the line is a really different line when we're traveling compared to just living our everyday life. And the line is, we don't want to eat anything that's going to make us violently ill, or that's going to be really hard to recover from. So for my kids, it's gluten for both of them. And then for my youngest, it's dairy. And then for me, it's gluten. Dairy just gives me a headache. So even that's not so bad, but it's nightshades. For me, it's gluten and nightshades are the two big things. And we just traveled internationally, which is like a whole other layer of complication because you can't bring fresh food across the border. So I kind of thought that would be like a really interesting thing for people to talk about. It's one of the questions I get a lot is like, well, what do you do in an airport? What do you do in an airplane? And I think what Stacey's saying is, you know, that's a great opportunity to have your 10% or your 20% or your cheap meal or, you know, whatever, you know, your, whatever you want to call it, your minor deviation from normal. But what do you do when you're like us and you've got these like really intense food sensitivities that are going to make you really, really ill if you eat something that is contaminated with gluten or, you know, that has it's different things for different people. Some people are super sensitive to like omega-6 fats. Some people it's, you know, gluten or dairy or, you know, whatever. So, can I share my travel, at least the food part of my travel? If I shared my entire travel related experience, we'd be here all day.
Of course. That's what we're here for.
Yeah. All day. So I, flew from, where I live in Atlanta, Georgia to where I grew up on the west coast of Canada by myself, the girls on Sunday. So by myself on an airplane with a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old, it's, awesome. It is so awesome that the, customs or the immigration officer, when I arrived at the Canadian border, which was actually like when we, you know, landed in Victoria, which is where I am now, he looked at me and went, "It's been a long day, eh?"
Hey.
Hey. And don't worry, you're here now. So I was like, "Oh, thank you." And then he asked me like 2 questions. Do you have a letter from their dad, a travel letter? Because you have to bring those. You're not allowed to travel by yourself internationally with your children without permission from their parent, whether you're married or divorced or whatever. And then, do you have anything to declare? That was like the 2 questions. I'm like, I'm normally used to being completely grilled by, I look shady apparently to, immigration officers. So I usually get completely grilled.
The idea of you being shady.
I normally get asked like 20, 25 questions. I don't know what it is. They just look at me. And then I often also get made fun of by immigration officials. So they'll ask me, I remember when I, this is a total tangent, but I'm jet lagged, so I'm going to go on tangents. When I emigrated to America and I was applying for my first temporary visa, I was moving to Arizona. And so the immigration officer said something like, so I hope you like college sports because you're going to need to like college sports in Arizona. Do you know what the name of the sports team is? And I was like, oh, I think it's the Wildcats. He's like, yes. Have you ever been convicted of a felony involving drugs? It was like his next question. I was like, what is this? It was the most unusual interview ever because it literally went from like completely benign question to like, do you any illegal substances? It's like, oh, no, I don't. But then I also don't watch college sports. I never get it. So this was the 2 questions. It was very, very unusual. So the trip was as great as you can imagine a trip with a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old. But I there was a lot of keep walking, keep walking, keep walking, just a little bit, walk a little bit, keep going that way. No, this way. No, we all got to stay together. No, this way. No, this way. This we all got to stay together. No, keep walking, walk, walk. No. Over here. It was like the most, it's amazing that I'm still sane. So food wise, which was, one of the things that I really, it was probably the only thing that I actually prepared in advance. And this was a trip that I really packed everything the day before, but I did spend some time a few weeks before our trip and ordered online travel food. And so what we did is I actually had a carry-on bag that was all of our travel food and we bought everything. So the only thing that we even brought empty, water bottles and we filled our water bottles, from a fountain in the airport. And I brought, my travel, thermos, travel mug combo thing. And, I had a tea bag already in it and we got some hot water at one of the coffee shops in the airport. And we didn't buy anything. We didn't eat any free food that was given to us. And so what I had in my bag, so the first part of the trip, like until you cross the border, you can have fresh food. And so what I had was my kids like, cold, like right out of the package hot dogs. And I know not everybody's kids like that. But you could easily do this with like deli meats or something else, or you could, my kids don't like meat sticks or anything like that, or jerky or anything convenient that's protein. You can even do this with hard boiled eggs or something like that. So I had like just a small freezer pack and I put the freezer pack in a Ziploc bag and then stuck that in a Ziploc bag with the hot dogs, and it kept it cold enough that it was fine for a few hours. And then I had a big Ziploc bag, like huge Ziploc bag, that had probably 5 pounds of vegetables in it. But I had carrot sticks, celery sticks, cucumber sticks, and some grapes, you know, all together. And that was like the fresh food that we had. And then we had, my kids really like Clif Kit bars, which I've talked about on the show before. I'm a huge fan of the bison flavored Epic bars, which are autoimmune protocol friendly for anybody with nightshade sensitivities. It's the only flavor that they have without nightshades. But I had bison Epic bars in there. I had RX bars, which use egg white protein powder for their protein, but they're the best egg white based protein bars that I have tried yet, that I think the flavor is really, really good. And they have an apple cinnamon flavor and a blueberry flavor that are really, my kids really like. And my kids are really sensitive to caffeine, so I prefer them to not have sort of bars with chocolate in it. Of course, they love chocolate, so this is a constant negotiation with them. And then what else do I have? I had raisins, and I had veggie-goes, which are these like fruit leather strips, but they're half fruit leather and half vegetables. So we had like the berry spinach veggie-goes. And then we also had a bag of plantain chips, and we had a package of rice crackers because my kids tolerate rice really, really well. And it's one of the convenience foods that we've started having around the house quite a lot more frequently lately is, you know, gluten-free, soy-free rice crackers. And, it was great. I mean, we ended up having basically two meals and a snack while we were traveling because our, travel time was about... Did I say that Canadian wise? Did I say about? About? Oh, it's coming back. The first time someone said A to me in traveling, I was like, oh, I'm almost there. Let's see now. I got distracted. Oh, we were traveling for about, oh, I now can't even say it. 11 hours, I think, door to door. So we had basically had two full meals and a snack. And then my kids actually had a second snack just because they were getting, I think, eating to keep themselves awake more than hungry. But it was good. I had enough food for that. And I still had a little bit left over by the time I got to the border. But one of the things I made sure I did was prioritize us eating the fresh food first. And if I had been left with anything fresh before crossing the border, I would have just tossed it. And that way, because you're not allowed to bring it, you're only allowed to bring non-perishables across international borders. And I definitely, you know... Most Western countries will allow you to bring, you know, things like Epic bars or jerky or, I had some jerky in there as well. U.S. Wellness Meats has three different jerkies that are made with just salt. And so that's another great travel food for people on the autoimmune protocol. So most countries will allow you to bring anything that's non-perishable. So if it doesn't need refrigeration, it's not a fresh fruit or vegetable, it's not fresh meat, it's not fresh dairy, they'll let you bring that across. So that's one of the things that definitely, though, if you're traveling to a country, like, have a look. That it's really easy to get the information about what will be allowed into the country. So just look for, you know, customs and immigration websites and double check that what you want to bring will be allowed. And usually when something's not allowed, it's a... sort of food inspection, like, you know, there's various pests that can be on our food and they're trying to protect their local food system by not having, you know, the, like, whatever it is that grows on orange trees in California that you can't bring oranges to Arizona. Like, it's the rules are even more strict across international borders because everyone's trying to make sure pests stay isolated. And they just can't logistically inspect food from every single person who travels. So they just make it a blanket rule that, no, you just can't bring fresh food. So because non-perishable food shouldn't have pests because of how it's packaged for processing, or processed for packaging, rather. So that's usually okay. And what we actually did, like in my suitcase, I had two cases of Epic bars and two cases of RX bars for the 3 weeks that we're going to be here so that I have emergency food that I can keep in my purse for whenever we end up somewhere where a gluten-free, dairy-free meal is not an option. So it means that, you know, wherever we are, I know what my kids and I are going to eat. It will not be ideal, but it will be something, and it'll get us to wherever the next place is where we can get a good meal. And I didn't have to worry about food when I get here because my mom eats paleo and she doesn't eat nightshades and she's completely dairy-free. So it was really, really easy. So for me, that logistic challenge of what am I going to pack on the flight is the biggest thing. And then, you know, it's food and entertainment. And entertainment, I loaded on a whole pile of new episodes of Jake and the Neverland Pirates onto my iPad, and that kept my kids busy for like 3.5 hours. I don't know if your kids...
Wesley loves it. Yeah, the other ones are too older, but I mean, they'll tolerate it because Wesley likes it, but yeah.
Yeah, even my 7-year-old, both of them are like totally into it. And it didn't. I had Frozen on my iPad as well, and they chose Jake and the Neverland Pirates over watching Frozen. And the airplane had the free Lego movie, and they chose Jake and the Neverland Pirates over the Lego movie.
Yeah, that would never have happened with my kids. Not even a wussy.
I do think the Everything is Awesome song is my new theme song. I just decided.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
It's the best song ever. Because everything is awesome. And I do it when the kids are whining, and I sing it at them. And then they just laugh at me, and then they stop whining for about 2 seconds. It's a nice 2 seconds. So you already talked about the food that you brought with you to the amusement park. What did you do for traveling to San Francisco?
I did more paleo kits. I really like the sticks from both U.S. Wellness Meats and Steve's Original. The texture just works well for me. Sometimes jerky is just like gets stuck in your teeth and I feel like it makes your breath worse than something else. So, I like those sticks that are like Slim Jims. And, I also like Epic Bars, the same one as you, the Bacon Bison. I really like Steve's Original Dried Strawberries. I think I've single-handedly...
Oh, those are so good.
I know. I feel like I've single-handedly sold out of their stock, which, you know, that happens when you cook real food. Like, there's only so many strawberries, and then they're gone. And pork rinds are... They work really well for me, surprisingly, even though they're higher in fat than some of the other foods. For some reason, my body, my digestion handles those.
Maybe because they're 80% air.
Yeah, they're like 80% air, 10% protein, 10% fat. So,
but 100% flavor.
And I find them really satiating. Like, I can eat maybe like a third of a bag. I don't eat a whole bag.
What?
I know.
I find the exact opposite. I do not stop until the bag is empty, and then I wish there was more.
Oh, see, I pick out all the ones that aren't burned, and then I give the ones that are, well, not burned, but like the darker ones that are harder to chew. I give those to Matt and the kids. So, but yeah, the pork rinds work really well for me. So, and we have a recipe and, Beyond Bacon to make what I believe are even better than those pork rinds, and Sarah's actually used it in her upcoming book as well. So if you can't afford those pork rinds, certainly make your own because you can make a big batch and then it's super affordable.
Way cheaper to make your own. Like, I know I've got one farmer who just doesn't have any market for organ meat or skin or anything. And actually, this is just one of those cool little tips. So I find the hardest part about making pork rinds, besides the waiting for them to be done, because it's a fairly long process, not involved, it's just long. The hardest part is cutting the skin into little pieces. Mm. You need a really good knife for it, and apparently my knives are not good enough. So I've used poultry shears, but it's still like a long job. So I asked the butcher at Whole Foods, I was like, would you consider cutting up my pork skin for me? And he was like, sure. I was like, I did not purchase it here. And he's like, well, then I won't tell anyone. I was like, okay. So I brought in like a 5-pound bag of pork skin. And he literally...
Your butcher at Whole Foods is a rule breaker, though. That's like a USDA nightmare.
Well, then, I mean, I didn't say anything, and I didn't say I didn't. Matt can bleep out the name, the word Whole Foods, and
well, we don't know which Whole Foods. It's, you know,
not my normal one, not the one I normally go to. Totally a different one, and nobody knows where it is. And it's not actually Whole Foods. It's a different store that went out of business and it doesn't exist anymore.
Well, even still, you can purchase, even if you can ask your butchers, let's say at Whole Foods or wherever your butcher is, because they often have leftover parts like organ meats, bones, and skin, and you can ask them which days they process those things and stop by on those days, and they will cut those for you. You're just not supposed to bring in meat from outside sources because then it could contaminate his kitchen and he doesn't know where it came from or whatever. But point being, yes, it's a good tip, and you can make your own. It's much more affordable. There's a recipe in Beyond Bacon, and Sarah loved it so much that she's putting it in her own book.
Yeah, I basically was like, hey, I cannot improve on your recipe, but I would like to use it. May I just use your recipe in my cookbook with my own added tips after making it so many times?
Sure.
Yeah, there's actually two recipes in out of 205 in my cookbook that aren't actually my recipes. They're like guest appearance recipes.
And I've had them both.
You have. The other one is Russ Crandall from The Domestic Man's autoimmune protocol-friendly flatbread. And I was trying to improve upon it in my own kitchen to have my own version of it. And I was like, I can't do any better than this flatbread. So I should just ask permission to include Russ's flatbread in my book. So Russ and Stacey and Matt were all very nice and said, sure.
So, let's see, other than that, travel food, I find that one of my favorite tips to tell people that they don't know, and I actually learned this from George Bryant from Civilized Caveman, is that Starbucks has Kerrygold butter packets that they put on their bagels, and you can ask them to blend your coffee with Kerrygold butter. So when you're out and about...
What? I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
I did not know that.
I'm so happy to be teaching you this moment right now.
I am so going to... It's a little bit late to go to Starbucks right now, but I'm going tomorrow.
Right.
Wait a minute. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Awesome.
Because I find it really difficult when I travel to find quality cream, like unless you're going to find a Whole Foods or something like that. And although I can have dairy, I really can't have low quality dairy, like the cream that they have at Starbucks. So I can go to Starbucks and get like a green tea or a coffee or whatever and ask them to put a packet or two of Kerrygold. They'll look at you like you're crazy, but they'll do it. And they'll blend it for you because they have Blendtex for their Frappuccinos. So you can get like a blended butter coffee from Starbucks, which is also one of those things that I find really satiating. Like if I'm in between meals and I know that I can't find something for a while, there's Starbucks on almost every corner of every city. And so I'm like, okay, let me just go get a butter coffee. And I know that'll hold me over for a couple hours. So.
I do. This is not where I'm opposite. I'm the same. I find, like if I have a buttered coffee in the morning, I'm not hungry for breakfast for hours. And, I can't handle drinking coffee every day because it gets to me. And I'll start to notice more inflammation, but I do that about once a week or so. And I'm fine if I leave it about that frequently, sort of once a week or once every week and a half. And I didn't know that I could do that at Starbucks. So especially cause I'm so close to where Starbucks started.
Yeah. You've got good coffee over there.
We've got great coffee. And actually, Victoria has amazing tea and flowers. And actually, really good. We've got a really good farm here for grass-fed and pasture-raised meat and really good quality vegetables. So that's always nice. It's always nice to, like, know how you're going to get food on the other side. So that's, like, my other big tip. When you're planning a trip somewhere, no matter where you're staying at the other end, if you're staying with... You know, family. If it's family who eat the same way you do, then you're in a really great situation. And I am so relieved to be in that situation. I basically bullied my mom until she went paleo, and then now it's easy. I don't advise bullying parents, unless you're like a blogger and can do that. You could ask nicely. So I really advise, you know, have, you know, go on to Google Maps or something and find out what's close to where you're staying. So whether you're staying with, you know, family that are non-paleo or, a hotel, you know, especially if you're staying in a hotel, see if you can get one that at least has a mini bar. So you have somewhere cold to put food. A lot of them will have just, empty bar fridges, which is even better because sometimes with mini bars, there's a fee just to open them. And figure out, like, okay, so I'm going to get there. Where's the Whole Foods? Okay, so I'll go check into my hotel, and then I'll go do a Whole Foods run. And that's what I did when I stayed in Reno for a book signing like a month and a half ago, is I paid an extra $10 a night for a room that had a bar fridge and a microwave. And I got there, and the first thing I did was go straight to Whole Foods and bought whatever food I needed for the whole weekend. And then I just had, you know, food that I could reheat in my room, and it was great. But have a plan. So have your travel food and have your emergency food, and then figure out where you're going to get your fresh food when you get to your destination. And that's, I'm a planner by nature. Stacey, are you a planner? Are you a person who likes to be like,
oh, I'm such a list maker.
Yeah, me too. It actually helps me. It's one of my stress management strategies, is to have lists and have a plan. So like, know what I'm going to do if, and so, and not everybody's like that. And that's totally awesome if you're not like that. But, you know, if you've got food sensitivities and you're traveling, having some stops where you know are going to be okay. The other thing that I did a little while ago was I just did a simple Google search, Vancouver Island gluten-free restaurants, and just had a look and to see what my options were going to be when I got here for, you know, while we're going to be driving up island in 2 weeks after my brother's wedding to spend time with my husband's family. And it was like, okay, well, are we going to be able to stop and get, you know, some kind of gluten-free meal on the way, or are we going to have to pack a picnic? Like, what are going to be our options? If I'm out shopping with the kids, like, what are going to be the stores to look for? Which restaurant chains have gluten-free menus? And that kind of information is really helpful. So it just, you know, if I know, oh, okay, I'm here. I wasn't expecting it to be mealtime and still be here. So now what am I going to do? And part of that is, you know, having things like Epic Bars in my purse. And the other part of it is knowing where I can go quickly to get something. We've probably covered a lot of the topics, but we've got a couple questions that are related to travel. Should we actually do some questions?
Sure. The only other thing that I wanted to mention is, like you said, the tip on getting a hotel or something with mini fridge is really super important. We actually usually don't stay in hotels. What Matt and I like to do, if possible, is like actually rent a house and share it with people, or we'll do a bed and breakfast where we can specifically tell the people what all of my crazy food intolerances are.
Oh,
and
cool.
So, I mean, if you're going somewhere for a long time, maybe that wouldn't work for you, but oftentimes when we go for like a weekend, we'll book a bed and breakfast that has reviews on being accommodating, or even offers like on bedandbreakfast.com, you can search by gluten-free. So like oftentimes, we'll choose a place that, you know, specifically states or has a review that says that it's, you know, friendly for people with food intolerances. And then when we'll call and we'll say, hey, you know, we're staying such and such a date, and I can't have any nightshades, and I can't do dairy unless it's butter, and because I don't just try not to get into it with anybody. And then, and you know, we're both very strictly gluten free, and they almost always, they love the idea of having to come up with a new recipe or think outside the box. Like, I find bed and breakfast owners are almost always super accommodating and actually pretty excited to cook for us. And, you know, we usually say things like, you don't need to get any special gluten-free flours. We're just happy with eggs and bacon. You know, and when you say that, it makes right. them feel relaxed. And then, the other thing that we do, like we did in Texas, is Sarah, Danielle Walker from Against All Grain, and Matt and I all shared a house. And then we kind of took turns cooking and got a rotisserie chicken or hard-boiled eggs or, you know, whatever it is. But having that where you kind of share a house can be sometimes more affordable than getting a hotel. It was for us in Austin, at least.
I saved about three quarters of what I was going to pay for a hotel room.
And it was way better to hang out with your friends and eat real food.
It was so much more fun. Yeah. I mean, I have to have space and have, like, you know, a living room to hang out in. And
yeah, especially if you're traveling with your family. Like, I just find that so much easier than a hotel. Like, I find once my children get out of a routine and all that kind of stuff, it's downhill from there.
Yes. But believe me, I know.
Yes. All right. Questions. Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Our first question is from Marla. And Marla writes, I started listening to your podcast about a month ago, and I've listened to them all already.
Oh my gosh, I feel so sorry for her.
Well, now, I think this is an older question, so maybe it wasn't, like, all 96 of them, but, yeah, it's a lot of podcasts. Your show is so encouraging and insightful, and your banter keeps me involved. I'm glad our banter is liked by somebody, because I don't think we can turn that off.
Yeah, I think we've got just as many people that like our banter as we do male listeners.
I think people, like, jump past the banter and go straight to the questions. I look forward to each one. I like listening to them with my kids in the car so they hear the third-party validation that what we are doing for them with transitioning their foods is truly best for them. My family, which includes two little boys, live in Dallas, and we are aiming to be healthier. I started clean eating 10 weeks ago due to a severe systemic candida problem. I'm on my journey to cleaning out my gut and fighting the stinking yeast with the help of nutritionally dense foods, an alternative medicine doc, and homeopathy. Little by little, I'm improving, but my regimen is really strict without any sugar at all, no vinegars or fruits either. So I'm wanting to just cook for myself at home, and I really fear eating out. I've tried reading the many pages of food sensitivities that restaurants sometimes have, but usually I end up eating something so bland that I'm not satiated. What tips do you have on eating out with very strict food sensitivities? I'm currently avoiding sugar. It cannot be listed in the ingredients even if the nutritional facts say zero. Vinegar, fruit, soy, corn, all grains, and dairy except butter is okay. It seems difficult to educate the waiters each time.
Yeah, that's a toughie. So I've done a 21-day sugar detox, but that's not to the level of no sugar that she's talking about. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to finish your sentence for you because
because it's like we're married. Yes.
Right.
And I've also done very strict autoimmune protocol. And even just on the, like, 90 days that I did super strict autoimmune protocol, I found it impossible to eat out. I wish that I had better news. And I know, Sarah, we've gotten comments from people, and you've told stories before where, you know, a chef will come out and say, you know, I promise you I'll be super accommodating. You know, I'll cook you a fish in butter and steamed vegetables, and there will be nothing else that goes on your plate. And then, you know, everyone has the best of intentions, and someone doesn't think about what counter they've set something on, and it gets crumbs on it, or they forget that canola oil isn't butter. You know, you know, they say butter, but they mean the soy margarine on their counter. Like, who knows? But I just have found that if you really are truly committed to doing a short program to really clean your system, and you are going to that amount of extreme, that I wouldn't personally trust going out somewhere unless it was a restaurant that I already consistently ate at and knew the food and trusted and knew how I reacted to it. And then I could say to them, listen, I'm planning on ordering this. Can you tell me what's in it? And, you know, if you're able to trust that restaurant, then maybe give that a try. But I just personally feel like for me, when I was in the autoimmune protocol, that even, you know, accidentally getting paprika in one of my dishes or getting some sort of, the biggest thing when you're eating out for me was fats, because nobody, because you can't have butter on the autoimmune protocol. And so there was nobody that was cooking things in lard. Like that's, it's just, or coconut oil. It just wasn't happening in restaurants. So, for me, I just said, you know what, this is a short amount of time, and I avoided eating out. And I, when we went places, I either ate beforehand or, I packed something and would, you know, try to be really polite about it and just said, you know, I just can't, and just leave it at that and not go into, well, you know, I'm doing this detox and blah, 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 you know. if I make a reference to, you know, I really can't, I've been feeling sick lately. And so I'm trying to just, you know, eat certain foods and I feel better if I just stick to this. Usually people aren't going to pressure you or fight with you or whatever if you tell them that you don't feel well. You know, it's people associate diets with weight loss so much that if I find that when I explain to people, no, that makes me sick, then they're, oh, okay. You know, like it's not an argument or a conversation anymore at that point.
Well, and I usually say, I mean, even though I don't think my reactions to, say, gluten and nightshades are a food allergy, I call it an allergy when I'm explaining something to somebody, because it's easier for the average person to understand what an allergy is. When you start talking about food intolerance or food sensitivity, or, you know, that food has a lot of immune stimulators and I have an autoimmune disease. I mean, that's just, it's not communicating clearly, and it's superfluous information. And I just use the word superfluous with jet lag. I'm just pointing that out. But it's, you know, they don't need that information. They just need to know that you can't eat something and bad things will happen if you do. I fully admit that at home we never eat in restaurants. I do when I'm traveling because I have no choice, but like, even if I'm traveling with my family, like while I'm here, you know, I'll be eating at all of the parties associated with the wedding, because my brother and his fiance are having like 17 different parties. It's not really 17, but it's still a lot. But my brother's fiance is extremely and actually allergic, you know, goes into anaphylaxis, allergic to gluten and to dairy. So I know that she's already done all of this incredible research to make sure that all of those meals are going to be gluten-free and dairy-free. But we don't, I mean, the last time we went out to a restaurant in Atlanta was our wedding anniversary 2 years ago. And after explaining that I couldn't eat nightshades, I got a ratatouille as a side dish put on my plate. In a paleo restaurant, like a restaurant that does paleo. And so to me, that was just like, you know what? I like to cook. I cook good food. And it's too hard. And I really find that adding nightshades on top of gluten as a food sensitivity makes it really, really challenging because of how ubiquitous paprika is as a spice. Red peppers often in things as well. But, you know, get to avoid tomatoes and avoid paprika can be really, really challenging in a restaurant. So, you know, when I do eat in a restaurant, especially, you know, if I'm traveling or whatever, and I'm definitely going to, and it's not, say, I'm visiting Stacy and Stacy's already vetted these places for me, because that's really handy. You can always just go visit Stacy as an option.
Everybody, but just come on down.
So what I do is I call ahead to the restaurant, and I sometimes, you know, a maitre d' or, you know, a manager, whoever's answering the phone, will be able to answer the questions. And sometimes it'll be more of a, you know, can you ask the chef this? And I just explain like what I can and cannot eat, and ask if they can accommodate that. And I'm polite and I'm apologetic. And, you know, and sometimes they're, you know, they're really confident. Absolutely. We can accommodate that. And then it's still can be challenging even once you get there. And other times they just say, you know, we can't guarantee that there's not going to be gluten cross-contamination in our kitchen. And then you go, okay, well, you know, thank you very much. And you call the next place and you just, you know, scratch the idea of going there. And so I find that having that dialogue before you even get there. And then when I get there, I go, hi, I'm the person who. Great. And then I've had like the chef come out and ask me, you know, well, can, you know, is this okay? If I do this, is this okay? And it often means that you sort of forfeit choice. Like there's not often like a menu where I have like 20 things I can choose from. Like sometimes I'm looking at a menu and I'm like, oh, what's the only dish on this menu that doesn't have tomatoes? Or sometimes it's like, well, the chef's going to prepare something special for me. And whatever the chef thinks is something that they can make that will, you know, they can do that will fit with my food restrictions, then that's what I eat. And sometimes it is not satiating, but I got the wonderful experience of, you know, being out in a restaurant and having someone else cook for me. So, you know, mostly I plan ahead. I think we already covered plan ahead, right?
Yeah. The other thing that you kind of mentioned, but I'll be really clear that we do, because we do eat out often. and not often, like we used to eat out almost every single night and then we went paleo and now we eat out probably twice a week between like, we almost always go out for sushi or chicken and yuca after we work out on Saturday mornings. And then usually there's like
the best chicken and yuca.
Thank you. And then we'll usually have some sort of something once a week. Like it's just the nature of the beast. So, what we always do if we go to a restaurant, especially if it's not like chicken and yuca is takeout, right? But if we go to a restaurant, the first thing when the waiter comes to the table and says, you know, can I take your drink orders? I'll look at them in the eyes and I'll say, we're really high maintenance. I'm just going to apologize in advance, but I promise you we tip well. And like, I just kind of put it out there.
It's awesome.
I put it out there and I break the ice and I'm like, you know, I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions. I'm going to be really annoying. I'm going to ask you 14 times when you bring me something, is it gluten-free? But I promise you I'll tip you well. And if waiters know that and they know that you're not just like obnoxious, then, you know, cause sometimes waiters get people in the restaurant who are just kind of being mean for the sake of being mean or who knows what, you know, and just kind of asking a million questions. And a lot of people who work in the food industry have come to ask, have people say, I'm gluten-free. And then they see something on a menu that they want and the waiter will say, well, that has gluten in it. And they'll say, okay, I don't care. Like, because they don't have allergies or, you know, they don't have the requirements that we have. And so a lot of waiters and waitresses just don't take it very seriously. So if I explain to people, I have celiac disease, our family is strictly gluten-free, I need your help navigating the menu, but I promise you, I'll be nice to you. Then they take it much more seriously and are usually really helpful.
Because they are looking forward to that extra nice tip at the end.
Yes.
Well, we have one more question. We've actually answered, I think we've touched on a lot of the topics in this question. So what I'll do is I'll read the question. We can kind of fill in the blanks, I think, because there's a few, I think, neat parts of this question that we could talk about. It's from Jen from Salt Lake City, Utah. And she writes, I don't know what to eat while I'm traveling. I'm about to go on my third trip away from my kitchen of safety since going full paleo. I was strict gluten-free for a year while realizing that things still weren't fixed on a gluten-free vegan diet. I've dabbled in giving up grains and allergens on doctor's advice before it worked well, and then I forgot how bad things were before the changes and slipped one bite, became one loaf, and so forth. It's hard. So I think for her, you know, she's now, her doctor has her now on a paleo diet, but she's really only eating eggs and fish. And for her, part of it is getting food that's safe, that isn't going to make her feel sick. But the other part is like not falling off the wagon by you know, having a cheat meal because she's still in those early, early days. And she is really, really challenged by visiting family or going to places that are very rural and not necessarily into the sort of, you know, chic gluten-free thing that I think, you know, a lot of little cafes and stuff are popping up all over, you know, more metropolitan areas to cater to the gluten-free market. And that's not necessarily in, you know, small towns in, you know, the heartland type area. So she writes, or her questions are, what do you eat when traveling on airplanes, road trips, hotels, camping with conventional family in small town America, elsewhere? And how do you politely ask all the things you need to know to not get sick while away from home?
I do think we've answered a lot of those questions. I heard her say camping, and we actually have a post on our blog where we talk about how we packed to go camping and what we ate over a 3-day period and how we made that work for us. So I recommend that she check that out.
That's a good post.
Thank you.
Didn't you call it glamping, though?
Glamping, yes.
Didn't you call it camping?
That's true. Yes, we called it glamping because we had a bathroom. But, like, we used, it had, like, a stovetop in there. And you can buy propane stovetops, and they're not that expensive. You can find them used on Craigslist. You can also find them at, like, Home Depot or Walmart or whatever, I think. So I would just highly recommend people do that. We also cooked, like, sweet potatoes and brats over a fire. So there's even ideas in there on, like, if you don't want to, you know, make the sweet potato hash over a propane stove, then, you know, there are some recipes in there on how to actually cook over an open flame. So I already explained how we're polite. I'm very upfront about it always. And I don't apologize for asking questions. Well, I do apologize. I say, like, you know, I'm sorry, I'm high maintenance, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, don't feel like you shouldn't ask those questions. I think a lot of times people, are afraid to ask questions because they don't want to be perceived a certain way or whatever. And I just think it's really important that people prioritize their health over what they perceive as someone judging them or something. Because for me, it's just, and I know it's the same way for you, Sarah, I cannot compromise on gluten. I just cannot ever. And nightshades for me are almost as bad as they are for you. Although I can do paprika, and some of the more mild seed spices, I can't do red pepper flakes. I can't do cayenne. And there have been plenty of times where I've seen something on a menu and it doesn't say anything about any nightshades in it. And then it comes out and it's in a red sauce. And I'm like, the menu didn't say tomatoes. And they're like, oh yeah, well, it's a tomato sauce. I'm like, well, I'm sorry, but I can't eat this. Is there something else that, you know, that the kitchen can make for me quickly, like a salad or whatever? And I don't pay for that dish, because if it's not in the menu and they don't tell me that it's a tomato sauce, like, you know, it's not my problem. So hopefully they change their menu after I leave. But, you know, those sort of things, I just, you know, I tell people up front, I'm going to be complicated, whatever. But I always ask a million questions between the different intolerances that each of our family member has. You know, the waiter or waitress is usually reading back our order 2 or 3 times just to make sure that they've got everything correctly. And that's totally fine with me. I don't mind if they come back and they say, hey, I just want to make sure. You know, don't get impatient with people. I think one of the key things to understand is that this is something that a lot of us have been dealing with for months or years, and it's something that we've come to think of as normal, that we know a lot about. But we can't, in my opinion, expect other people to know our food intolerances and allergies. And so if you say to someone, I can't have nightshades, it's not, in my opinion, their responsibility to know that nightshades are tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, potatoes, whatever. Right. You know, I just think it's, you know, each of us as a consumer has to do our due diligence and be really clear about what we can and cannot have. And also, you know, communicate that. And what I often see, or hear from people is that, you know, they get frustrated with a waiter or waitress because the waiter or waitress thought that cheese was gluten, or that the waiter or waitress didn't understand that panko crumbs were gluten. You know, like different things. The waiter or waitress isn't responsible for your food intolerance. The best thing to do is often, you know, if you do have a severe allergy or something and you're not getting a good feel that the person that you're talking to knows what they're talking about, ask to speak with the manager and do it in a really nice way and just say, you know, I just have a few more questions. I'd like to speak with the manager. If, you know, it doesn't have to be mean. It doesn't have to be abrasive. Matt and I, on Friday after the amusement park, when we were leaving, I was starving because all I'd had all day after that food ran right through me in the middle of the day was a paleo kit and the
pork rinds.
Thank you. And so on our way out, Matt was like, well, you know, what do you want to eat? And we know plenty of local restaurants at this point, and our house was almost an hour away, and I didn't want to wait an hour to get home. And so I'm like, okay, looking on my phone, trying to find a Chipotle or an Elevation Burger or a Five Guys or some place that I know I can eat and not have a bad reaction to. And we ended up going to this place called Lido's, which is like a pizza place, but they have lots of salads and stuff like that as well. And I didn't know it, but they had gluten-free pizza. So all I wanted was a salad. I just really wanted vegetables. And so we go in, and I'm all excited. I'm going to get a salad, and Matt's going to get a gluten-free pizza. And when we were talking to the waiter about the gluten-free pizza, we could tell he had no idea what we were talking about. Like, there it is right on the menu. Like, there's a whole big thing about, we've got gluten-free pizza, and you can do this. And it was like, okay, Matt looked at the regular pizzas and he had picked the one that he wanted. And then he was like, okay, I want this on gluten-free bread. And the guy just didn't get it. And rather than kind of trusting and saying, okay, well, let's cross our fingers and hope he figures it out, you know, we asked really politely if we could speak to someone else who might understand us better. And that waitress was then able to kind of be a go-between between what we were saying we wanted, and the other guy was able to understand and then put the order in. But, you know, for us, it's just not something that we're willing to take the risk on. If we don't feel like someone's understanding, I'm not trying to be rude, but I'm also not trying to be sick. So I just, you know, you kind of have to draw that line on. And if you really, if there's no one in the restaurant that understands at all, what I always do is just, I get a salad and then I ask for the olive oil and balsamic, you know, dressing or whatever. And that way you kind of know that you're in the safe there. That's what I've done when I've been in kind of a small town and talking to someone who had no clue. It's like, all right, well, I know I can get a salad, no, hold the tomatoes and bring me some olive oil.
Yep. I've done that. And I've actually been in the place where they've been all out of olive oil and I've just had balsamic vinegar on my salad. And, you know, it worked. You know, I think with all of those questions, my strategy is always planning ahead and, you know, figuring out where I'm going to eat ahead of time. When it comes to staying with conventional family, it's having the conversation with them before I get there. You know, what foods do we need? And then I figure out where the grocery stores are, and I will go out, and when I get there, and I will go out to the grocery store and buy my own food. And I don't expect them to pay for it if I'm going to be, you know, eating differently than they're eating. And I just, you know, I get there and I say, hey, no, I'm afraid, you know, I've got these foods I know I can't eat now. And, don't worry about me. I'll go, you know, go to the grocery store and get, you know, whatever safe foods, I can get there or that I know that I can cook in their kitchen. And, you know, and even if that means like my very first trip, visiting family and, being paleo, I, you know, was cleaning, you know, a relative's kitchen to make sure that I didn't get contaminated with gluten because of their counter being covered in breadcrumbs. And so I just, you know, that's what I had to do to make sure that I was going to be safe. And so that's what I did. And, you know, try and do it in as nice a way as possible and say, you know, I don't expect you to be accommodating me. Like, I'm the one who's got these special things. Like, let me look after myself and don't worry about me. And you know, how you handle that with your family, of course, is going to depend exactly on your specific family dynamics. But it really all comes to planning ahead and having an idea of where you can get safe food when you get to wherever you're going. And in the meantime, while you're actually traveling, bringing what you can with you, whether that's, you know, a cooler packed full of great foods that you can eat cold for a road trip, or the long, long list of things that I bought on the airplane. You know, having that plan ahead of time is how you stay on track.
Awesome. Well, thank you for
everything is awesome.
Oh my goodness. Thank you for pulling together a topic that we could give people. I feel like this was better than a check-in show. And sorry for having to reschedule, but thank you, Sarah, for...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you. It's all right. So, we will be back next week on Who Knows What with I don't know who. Sarah will still be in Canada, probably with much more A's and avocados and all those things that we love.
We'll definitely have more of an accent by next week. And I will definitely be done my book by next week.
Ooh, ooh.
I know, I'm so excited.
Yeah, we've said that before. I won't celebrate prematurely.
Well,
wait.
So here's the line. If it does not get submitted to the printer on Friday, it doesn't get printed and distributed on time for the release date. And everybody knows that. And so it's like the absolute, absolute, absolute last day.
Awesome. Well, you're going to get it done. It's going to be awesome. I've seen it already. I know it's already awesome. It can only get awesomer. So,
it's awesome.
We will be back next week, hopefully using the word awesome much less, because we will not have all these personal distractions. But I just want to thank all of our listeners for sticking with us for almost 2 years. I mean, we've done these without a break for a really long time. And part of the reason that Sarah and I do this is because of you guys, but we also love your feedback. And, you know, it's wonderful when we go to book signings and stuff, people who listen to the podcast, we know that we have such a strong connection with you all. So thank you for being there for us and supporting us through all of these complications and, you know, being along for the ride. And, just being so unconditionally supportive of us. And I don't mean to speak for you, Sarah, but I can only imagine that you feel the same way. And that
absolutely.
Yeah, it's really special to be a part of your lives, and we're really grateful that you're a part of ours. So thanks for continually tuning in, and for all the support that we've received lately about all the projects and personal things that we have. And
yeah, we've received some really sweet, supportive, encouraging emails lately. And, you know, it was a lot to read out on the podcast today, but thank you to all of you who took the time to do that, because we read all of those, and it really does buoy our spirits and make the effort that getting a book to the printer and trying to, you know, still handle all of our other responsibilities, it makes it feel worthwhile. And it's really important for us. It really helps us to get that kind of feedback and support.
Agreed. So thank you all, and we'll be back next week. We can't guarantee anything, but we know we'll be back next week.
All right, good night, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites, or by donating through PayPal.
I said goodnight, and it's the middle of the
day. It's not even nighttime.
Here it is. But I just always end it with goodnight, and then I realized it was the middle of the day, and then it was too late. I already said it, so there you go.
You formed a habit after 90-some shows. It's too late to break.
97. Yeah. We should do it completely drunk.
Okay, I'll give you 1 teaspoon of vanilla.